Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury.
So for the final time this week, a mystery guest. So,
what do you want to hint? I'm fresh off the golf course in Clearwater, Florida, and this is Wheels from Bluebell.
Well, I was just telling the story the other day about the stout kickoff.
Yeah, that was funny. That was funny when you said that. That made me laugh, I'll tell you.
But that's, you know what? You know, that's because I think the world of you, that's for one thing. But that's, you know, but you know, you get to the point when you do this, how relaxed you are.
Yeah.
So you're relaxed enough to say something like that because you're like, headed toward Wheels' house.
Well, you've always had him kicking a football from to some ridiculous distances and places. So why not my condo over here? Good.
I mean, look, when we were in Madison, I had him kicking it to Appleton. Okay, so when Michigan State, I had him kicking it to Grand Rapids. It was only appropriate I had you in there. So
hey, next year you may have to talk about some kickoff returns for the first time in a few years.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I may have to brush up on that. remember how to do that.
All right, it's been a while.
It's been a while. All right, so this is what I'm really so thrilled you're on, because there's so many things I want to talk to you about. All right, so you got some time here?
Oh, I'm retired.
A lot of people were hoping I'd be. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm retired and enjoying myself down here in Florida, so I got all the time in the world for you.
Perfect. So let's start with this. You endured, you know, 81. You endured, you know, what, 85 briefly, 94, 95, and others along the way. You endured all that.
All of them.
When you see how it's playing out right now, what runs through your mind, because you have lived through it and it's affected your livelihood?
Well, the number one thing that runs through my mind is how that it ticks the fans off, and that's the last thing you want to do in your business, as you know, Steve. You don't want your fans upset at you and this thing, because they don't care. They don't care what the issues are. They just want to see the games and want to see the owners and the players, you know, get down to business and get it over with and play. But the worst thing is, you know, obviously I was on the ownership side for so long, and you know, they have their issues. But the players, it's a lot of times it's different guys. They haven't been through this stuff, and they really don't understand the ramifications of it. And what you're dealing with right now is a whole new generation, complete with the union leadership, that it's totally different. It's totally different. They haven't got to go through this yet, and they don't understand how serious it is. And all of a sudden, the clock starts ticking, and you're getting close to these deadlines, and you're not getting anything done. Like they turn down the mediation. Well, I wasn't surprised about that. So
right,
it's unfortunate. And the other thing is, you know, players don't get paid until the season starts. So you know, and they don't, half of them don't like spring training anyway. They don't want to be down here for 6 weeks. So you know, there's no urgency, unfortunately.
Great points. And here's a point I've made on the show, regardless of the sport. There's a triangle that makes sports work. You need owners. I mean, you need money. Okay? You need players. They're the centerpiece of what the owners are investing in. But the third part of the triangle is the part that's always left out that you brought up. It's the fans. None of this happens without them. They're the ones that subscribe to Cape. They're the ones that buy tickets. They're the ones that buy merchandise.
Yeah, and it... believe me, ownership thinks about it more than the players do. The players are the players. They have their, you know, they all think the owners are so wealthy and that they should be making more money, and like any employee does. But the real world does not want to hear about these kind of hissing contests between, people making a lot of money and then the owners, who of course are multimillionaires for the most part. Not all players make a lot of money, and now a lot of this, what this is about, is about service time and trying to get guys to make more money when they're younger. because the last negotiation, it actually did take the average salaries down for the last 2 years. So I think that's what they're playing off right now. And if anybody were to sit down and try and explain the issues to people, you'd glaze over in about 2 minutes. You know,
right,
it would
exactly.
get so boring trying to listen to it.
Oh, exactly. Exactly right. I know the fans in Pittsburgh were hoping that it'd be a cap because the cap would meet a floor. And I guess the owners proposed a $100 million floor. And the players rejected it because they said, if you want a floor, that means you want a cap. We said no. They said no. It's interesting. I mean, the way this
well,
is. And you're right. And fans will glaze over in a second, like, oh, God, it's millionaires.
Oh, yeah, they don't
want to
hear it. And you know, Steve, people, I went through all eight of them, or eight, seven, eight, nine, whatever they are. The first one, I think, was 71 or 72. So, but the number one issue, you know, I used to get it all the time when I go out. How come you guys don't have a salary cap? And I said, well, what the heck do you think all those labor stoppages were about?
Right.
They weren't able to do it. They kept losing in court. Or they would beat themselves. The owners would beat themselves, and Marvin Miller and Don Fear beat them like a drum in those days.
Yeah.
So there's no salary cap. So sure, would you like to have a salary cap? Yeah. Will the players ever, ever, ever go anywhere near a salary cap in baseball? No chance.
No, no chance. Now let's talk about what we do. And it was interesting that I was interviewed yesterday, and the interviewer asked me about, you know, positivity, negativity, and so forth. And I said, look, I said, you got to understand, over time, you develop relationships with people. I said, is it your goal in a relationship or a friendship or whatever? I said, I'm sorry, you can't avoid it. You end up, you know, you can't keep putting up the wall. There's one person on the face of the earth I thought about as I was saying this, was that you and I have walked this parallel deal along the way where Charlie Manuel trusted you to talk about stuff that would never see the light of day. I mean, you don't think James or Micah or what, or I'm standing there seeing it, that doesn't make the light of day? Of course not, because that's not how it goes.
Yeah.
It's not realistic.
Well, there's absolutely, you know, you and I have talked about this over the years because of what we do and what I did. I mean, what you still do and what I did for so many years. And I did pregame shows with managers for a long, long time. And the first thing that you find out is that they will decide whether or not they're going to trust you or not. And
yes,
you can't make that happen. And after a period of time, they'll trust you. And as you know, the greatest thing about them telling you things is not that you'll use them, but they'll lead you in the right direction so you don't go off half-cocked on something.
Exactly.
And I always felt that that was the best part of it.
Exactly. In other words, it's that kind of, quote, deep background material that keeps you from doing something stupid.
Right? Yes.
This has always been the theory I've had about this. Chris Wheeler knows a ton about broadcasting and how the nuts and bolts of broadcasting works. I think I'm in the same category. The head football coach, the head basketball coach, or the baseball manager know exponentially more about football, basketball, and baseball than I do, even though I think I know a lot, but they know way more, but I know more about the broadcasting of it.
Absolutely, and that's the whole thing about when you're doing that, is you're doing an interview that you're taping for the most part, so if something goes horribly wrong, you know, you can fix it. But for the most part, you're doing something that you don't want to touch, that when it's over, it's over, and you've gotten into the, you know, Steve, the hardest thing, and you go through it with James, and you went through it with Joe, and I went through it because we would do it daily almost.
Yeah.
Where something would happen the night before, and then when talk radio came along, they'd be blabbing about it all day, and now you can't do a pregame show with the manager that night and not ask him about that situation that occurred the night before and why he did it and what he was thinking. Now, you don't have to beat him up about it because you're not a talk show host. But you need, I mean, I can't begin to tell you how many times I would look at a guy and say, look, this happened last night. It's all over the place. We got to go into this. And 9 times out of 10, they look at you and say, no problem. Once in a while, they go, well, we got to be careful with this. And then we would figure out what we were going to do.
Every time I've been in that spot, I've done the same thing. So, you know, I have to bring this up. And you know what? And you know what I've always said? I know you'll ask it the right way. Right? It's all how you ask it, because the key to asking it is that you do it in such a way that just allows them to say whatever they want to say about it.
Well, I think you just brought up one of the best points, because it's a lost art nowadays, and I hear you how you do interviews, and I've known you for so long, and you teach classes and all, but people don't ask questions when they do interviews.
Oh.
Now. They make a two-minute statement. They'll make a two-minute statement, and then what's the guy going to say? Yeah, right. I did that one time with Jim Fregosi. Jim Fregosi looked at me with those glasses down over his nose, and I mean, he could give you some looks.
Oh, yeah.
He looked at me and he said, when I'm taping the show, and he goes, well, Mr. Wheeler, he said, that was a really brilliant point you just made. Now, would you like to ask me a question? So I looked at him. I stopped the tape. I said, all right, Jimmy, we'll. But that's the point. It drives me crazy when, and you know, big-time network people and all, too, they just throw out a statement, and then the guy says, yeah, well, that's right. No, ask a question, and I would hope that everybody that tries to teach journalism nowadays and broadcasting and interview techniques is ask a question and don't make a statement, because nobody's on listening to the interview to hear how smart you are.
Well, I always tell them ask what and why questions.
Yeah, that's good.
Instead of, in other words, don't make a statement, but don't ask a yes or no question either.
Yep.
Ask a what or a why question. That way it gives them a chance to answer. And the bottom line is, you don't have to sit there. Just ask the question. You don't have to prove how smart you are. You're already sitting there.
Right. That's really well put. I never quite thought of it that way, but that's probably the way that I did it. We all make mistakes. And
you did
every once in a while, you'll tick the guy off. But what are you going to do?
But you did hundreds of these, and I'll bet on hundreds of these, 95% of the time you ask what or why questions, and maybe out of fatigue, 5% of the time didn't.
That's so true. And the other thing was, well, you mentioned Charlie. Well, Charlie had a tendency to drop a cuss word or two in there. He didn't have a real good filter, so I would just let it go. And he'd finish the show, and he'd say, how was that one today, Wheels? All right. And I'm thinking, oh, man, I got to call Jim Jackson and do about four edits. I'd say, Chuck, that was outstanding. No problem. I'll see you later. Good luck tonight. And I'm walking out of his office going, oh, boy, do we have to fix that baby up. Because we got to get the hells and the dams out of there. So, that would be one of those things with Chuck that you always do these, not always, but you knew you were going to have to fix them sometimes. But he was so honest. You know, he had a great word a player got a little bit flustered. Well, that was a combination of two words, and everybody knew what he meant.
Like, it's like
strategery.
It's like strategery. All right. So.
Yeah, right.
Charlie
had his own language.
But here's another element, too. The recorder's off. Okay, and you've developed a good rapport. You've developed a good rapport. Sometimes you're one of the few people they can talk to.
Yep.
And that,
I can't begin to tell you how many times I had a manager call me their personal shrink. I may have spent 45 minutes in that office with the guy for a 5-minute show.
Mm-hmm.
But we would talk about so many things, and then we do the show, and then we talk about more things afterwards. And as you brought up at the beginning of this conversation, is when they trust you, they need to bounce some stuff off you that they can't bounce off anybody else maybe at that particular time. So they really look forward to you coming in there at that time. And I could always tell when it was going to be one of those days where I might be there. And then, of course, then they look at you and say, get out of here. I don't have any more time for you. Get out of here. And you're thinking, well, you know, I sat in here all this time with you because you wanted to talk. And it always made me feel better when they would say that to you later on. Hey, I do appreciate that you act as a shrink for me. And I always enjoyed it, too.
Yeah. No, I mean, and I'm talking like every coach I've been with, every one of them has always been, hey, you know, they'll talk to you for a little bit. Right? Because there's some things they need to get off. Either they have a question about something, not about anything I'm doing, but like they may have a question about something. or they may have, or they want to get something out there. You can't believe how things are going with X out there. Oh my goodness! Right? One of the coaches one time said to me, he says, "It would really help our cause if he knew the plays."
Yeah, that would. That's be like saying it's the catcher, boy, nice if you put the right fingers down once in a while.
Yeah, I'll text you. I'll text you the name of the player, by the way. Okay,
you'll love it. Yeah.
I will.
Well, we had a catcher one time that one of our pitchers used to think he could clean both ears with one Q-tip. You know, so that was not a good thing when you had a catcher like that. That just he couldn't remember what fingers to put down or they wanted to put first sign after two, and he would never put a two down. So, the pitcher would be going crazy. Like, I'm looking for a two, and I'm looking for the next sign after that. The other thing about managers, and you do it with coaches and all, is sometimes they'll say something when you're in one of those off-the-record sessions that is on the record that you can use in the interview you're going to do. Right. And I always thought it was good to be a good listener, too.
Oh, Wheels, that's the whole name of the game in doing interviews. Ask what and why questions, and then listen. Don't be thinking, and I tell my students, I texted you the name, by the way.
Oh, all right, I'll check it out later.
You got to check out.
I'm afraid I'll hang up on you.
But I tell them, ask what or why questions. I said, but don't get married to all the questions you have. Listen to what they're saying. They may take the interview in a direction that's better for the audience.
So well done. I mean, that's perfect. The one thing you don't ever want to do when you're doing an interview is write down your questions.
Oh,
if you can avoid it.
Did you ever avoid it
because you won't listen.
Did you ever?
You won't be listening.
No. Have you ever written down?
No, I never.
Neither
have
I. No. I've never written down a single question.
No.
Never.
Because you need to play off, as you said, you need to play off the manager in our case or the player and not have a whole list of questions in front of you. You know, that I've got to work these in, because the odds are he will answer that question and then you'll repeat the thing. And you really sound foolish, like you're not paying attention.
Yeah, I've never written down a question for a sports interview. Never. You got to have a feel for the game to begin with. So, I mean, that's why you're sitting there. They think you have a feel for the game to start with.
Yeah, well... Yeah, and look, not everybody that they have interview sessions with are inside baseball, inside football, inside basketball people. They're just sometimes they're just professional broadcasters who are doing the best they can do. Luckily, in our cases, I was a pretty good inside baseball guy, and you obviously are a very good inside football basketball guy, and probably other things that you do too. So that really helps that they know that. And that they can talk to you on a certain level, and that way you're able to really able to share things with your listeners. And let's face it, the number one thing you're doing there is that's not in for you, that interview, or for him, that is to try and entertain the audience that's going to listen to it later and help them learn something.
It means so much to me that you called in today. As soon as I heard the voice, I said, I got 1,000 things I need to talk to this guy about. All right.
But by the way, a pretty good recruiting class, huh?
The recruiting class is, I'll tell you, I have not watched the 9 that are here yet. I'm going to probably go to a workout in maybe 2 or 3 weeks to start getting a gauge on the 9 kids that are here. But they think 23 could be an even better class. And if you can start stacking classes, Wheels, now you're going in a great direction.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the day that when they put all the classes out that we're ahead of Ohio State. That gets so annoying, the way they keep recruiting as well as they do. But more power to them. They're terrific in what they're able to do.
I got a text from Stout. He wants his ball back. No, just kidding.
Well, it's out here on the first tee. I'll get it for him.
You are one of the greatest things over the years is the friendship that we have. I think the world of this guy, just like Philly fans, you've thought the world of him. You'd think even higher of him if you knew him. So, Wheels, thanks so much, buddy. You're the greatest.
Thank you, Steve. Our friendship means a lot to me, too, and we'll keep in touch.
You bet.
All right.
Chris,
take care.